We'll take our seats, please. I have apologies from Councillors Devlin, McMurray and Savage. Any other apologies? Anything else? Johnson.
Where'd Robert Burgess go to?
Right. Okay. Any declarations of interest? No one's interest. Okay, folks. I don't think so, Charlie, is it? Okay, folks, so I'd like to welcome Mr. Paul Isherwood, Ms. Loma Wilson, and Oliver Hickey from the Housing Executive to do a presentation to us tonight. So I'll hand over to Paul.
Good evening, members. Thank you very much for the opportunity to come and present the Housing Investment Plan update to the Council today. I'll be taking you through a brief presentation and we'll gladly accept any questions at the end. If there's any questions that we can't answer, we'll gladly come back with a response as quickly as possible to them. So, first of all, technology.
Did you just say with that?
Okay, thank you. So I'm just going to give you a brief presentation, as I say, and then we'll take any questions at the end. So the purpose of the HIP then is it's twofold. It has two main purposes. The Housing Executive is statutorily required under the 1981 Housing Order to report to the councils on its past year's performance and its next year's proposals. And also, the Housing Executive is a community planning partner, and the HIP provides an evidence base that will inform future community planning. So the overview of the HIP. After consultation with a range of stakeholders, the HIP provides an overview of the housing market in the Newry, Mourne and Down District Council area. The HIP examines cross-tenure housing issues and detailed social housing investment at a local level. It's a four-year plan with an annual update in intervening years. This is the third and final annual update prior to a new four-year plan being produced in 2019. In future years, it will be reviewed to reflect community planning priorities as well. So, it has a themed approach, and the HIP contains five themes. The first theme is identifying and meeting housing need and demand, improving people's homes, transforming people's lives, enable sustainable neighbourhoods, delivering quality services. 10 outcomes are highlighted, each of which a set of key actions to achieve each outcome. Tables show last year's performance against plans, actions for next year, and a longer-term outlook. And I understand that you've all got a copy of the plans, so I'd love to believe. The next slide, then, is just giving you an overview of the investment within the council area. As you can see, we don't have all of the figures available on the community development and the new build, but they will be provided at a later point to the council. And as you can see there, last year we spent over 50 million within the council area, 19 million on the stock improvements, adaptation plan, maintenance response, grants and supporting people. Again, we don't have all of the figures available to us at this moment in time. However, the projected spend on the high level key areas there is 17.71 million. Key housing issues then, as with all of the councils. We have an ageing population. Total housing executive stock within the area is just over 5,000 units. We've seen a slight decrease in the waiting list of 3,166 total applicants, and that's just short of 5% decrease on last year. However, 2,388 or 75% are in housing stress. 1,135 households presented as homeless, and this was a decrease of just short of 6% on the previous year. However, 789 persons, or just short of 70%, accepted as homeless. In that year, we also made 430 social housing allocations across the Housing Executive and the Housing Associations. So, in 17-18, 56 new social homes were completed, and we've got 354 new social homes on site. Future housing issues. 1,959 new social housing units are needed over the next 5 years, and the 18-21 programme gives us a gross programme of 451 social housing units being programmed. Mixed tenure developments of affordable housing still a priority. Welfare reform, again, going to have a big impact, and of that we've just got short of 13,000 HB claimants as of March 18. So the next steps then. Progress against the HIP objectives will be regularly monitored and will be reported on an annual basis, and this is the purpose of this meeting. The housing investment plans, the community plans and the new local development plan should all align and fit together. The Housing Executive colleagues will continue to work with the council as a partner and provide evidence and agree outcomes. And hopefully the new plan, say 2019, will come forward. That was just my brief overview of the plan. If there's any questions you'd like to ask, we'll gladly accept them.
Okay. Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. It's just to get a bit of an understanding. There seems to be a real abandonment of the rural areas or the rural villages or small towns within the rural areas. But there's absolutely been no build, particularly in the area I represent in Cullaville. We have five houses building at the minute, and that's the first in about 20 years. Five small units in Cross Midland. We didn't have a bill in there, almost except for one or two houses that was built for special needs. We didn't have a bill by the Housing Executive, I think, almost in 20 years. We have the same in Cullyhanna. We have the same in Craigan. We have the same in Glasdrummond. And you have the issue PTS 21 and the building in the rural areas, you know, where it's only people involved in agriculture, infill sites and special circumstances and that, you know. So we have a lot of people, we're losing an awful lot of people that would like to remain or live in our area that actually has to move out, that's forced out of the areas that they are born and reared in. And they feel, and I feel too, that those areas have been totally abandoned by the Housing Executive. You know, that there's no actual place for them. It used to be we moved from the rural areas into Cross Midland. Cross Midland is there's not a house available in Cross Midland. There has been a bit of private building, and they are actually stopped at the minute. But there's actually been little or none by ourselves. And I say all of those surrounding villages is the same. And I don't honestly know where people is going to go, where they're supposed to live, but we do need housing. And there's actually, I would even say to people, you must put that, and they're saying, well, they would be so low on the point system, there's no point putting down their names, you know. And I was saying, like, for the test and that, they need to keep putting down their names. But we're actually, I would go as far to say, we're actually in a real bad way for housing within those areas, you know, that all the building seems to be taking part in the bigger towns, and as I say, it's a real abandonment of those areas.
Do you just want to take all the questions and then answer, or do you want to answer them?
Terry, about 2 years ago, we had Cross Midland actually as a choice-based letting area. So basically what had happened was there were a number of new built schemes did go into Cross Midland. Most of them, I think, were Foulter and I Radius, and they put in a number of phases. and it took us to a situation where really we had reached the point of saturation. We actually found it really difficult to let any properties that came available for us. So until about a year, 2 years ago, we had that classified as actually a difficult to let area. Now we've noticed that changing, and this is probably what you're alluding to as well, that we're noticing there's interest again in Crossy Glen. Even just in the last week, I've had interest from a housing association who's put forward a proposal. It will never be housing executive again because we haven't built since 1997. But there's housing associations coming forward with proposals for Cross McGlen. We would be supporting those. If it had been 12 months ago, 24 months ago, we wouldn't have, because we did find it difficult to let any of our properties that were coming vacant. So we are seeing a change there. And in some of the rural locations, we've got a few proposals through, but I'll let Alva go in the detail on that for you. But it's just to put some context on it, Terry, you know, that that has been the case up until... Well, as I say, we are starting to see an increase in demand. The choice-based letting, the way that that worked was we would have advertised. We went out and openly advertised to people that we had vacancies, and that was the only way we could let the properties. That has changed, as I say. We're now starting to see a waiting list coming through, and that's why we're seeing housing associations coming through with proposals. So hopefully you'll start to see those coming through and more new build. There isn't a lot of turnover. Is going to be one of the issues in Cross McGlen, right across the whole of the district. We don't have a lot of turnover. What we're finding is people are settling in housing executive houses. They're choosing not to leave because they don't have other options, and that's one of the big difficulties, that you're not getting the turnover that you would see. And it maybe comes up in the small bungalows in Cross McGlen, where you're not getting three-bed houses. So I appreciate for some families it would be difficult, yeah.
Just following on from Loma, we obviously had this symposium in January where we looked at the housing needs right across the districts, and following on from that, we've organised district electoral area meetings. So we come along, you know, to your local forum, and we have, I suppose, a more detailed look of what actually that, you know, the housing situation is in that area, and that feeds into sort of a housing action plan that we'll devise for that area. So for example, in your area, maybe looking at that lack of supply and turnover, but also maybe the affordability issues that we're seeing in rural areas where there's maybe a demand for social and also for private rented and intermediate housing, and how that all fits together with, you know, in sustaining rural development. So I think the one for your area is coming up in October, so that's maybe something we can pick up in more detail after that.
Okay. Councillor Andrews.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. First of all, I'd like to take the opportunity, I'd like to thank Bruno McGorian and our team here in Downpatrick. You know, I appreciate very much their help and support, and any representations that have been forwarded to them, that we commend it for their efficiency and for the work that they do. I just have a few wee pointers here in relation to welfare reform. What plans have you got in place with more people losing legs of entitlements to PIPs, disability benefits, and as a result of losing that, they lose premiums and rents and etc., and end up cases that are potentially getting thrown onto the street because they can't make up the difference in rent. Also, in relation to the point system, you know, I do get representations from the constituents that maybe sit on 160, 170 points, waiting on a housing list for years, and then the next thing, not being able to get a house because of other circumstances, you know, people coming in ahead of them, you know, due to the point system, and you know, people feel that local people should be dealt with first. And also in relation to disabilities, you know, I would like to throw this out to the housing executive. Why can they not give powers to the local managers for example, in case of adaptations or works that needs done in housing, that it's taken forever and a day in cases of getting houses adapted because of procedures with tenders. Never, why come not give the local managers, if you know the person's circumstances, why not grant them the powers, give them a level of funding so that they can sort of really turn around and say, this house needs adapted, go for it, set it within weeks and months. You know, that's just my feelings on the matter, and I just would be more than grateful if you take it on board. But thank you again for your help.
Okay, Terry, just to respond to you on those, relation to welfare reform, yes, early days for us in the implementation of welfare reform. We haven't had any cases coming to us yet where they have reached that critical point. Now, what we're trying to do is we are trying to be one step ahead with advice and assistance to people. We do have concerns about the way that this is going to work out for some people. We're working very closely then with the Citizens Advice Bureau. We're working very closely with the Jobs and Benefits Office. As you know, it's a DFC benefit. We have less control, I suppose, than we did when we had housing benefit. But really what we're doing is on an individual by individual basis. If there is a particular case where you know that it has reached a critical situation, if you could even let us know and we'll see what we can do. We can work along with the department and see can we advocate on somebody's behalf. But really at the moment all we can do is provide advice and assistance. The critical thing, and I suppose to get across to everybody, is if anybody has to make a claim for universal credit, that they do it from the very start, from day one, and that people aren't waiting, because you wait long enough to get the benefit paid. So we're watching, waiting to see how that pans out. In relation to the points, this, Terry, as you know, comes up all the time as well. And we do have perceived issues as well, where people feel that people are coming outside an area into their area with higher points, and local people maybe don't get priority for housing. The common selection scheme, that's the way it is built in legislation. People have the right to choose where they want to live. They can choose anywhere in the province. And in the old system, we did have local points, which they did away with. So unfortunately, that's the system that we're working with. You know, there is the fundamental review of allocations, and there were recommendations have gone through on that. But as it stands, without Stormont in place, we don't expect to hear anything back, you know, in relation to changes to the common selection scheme at this stage. I'm going to pass you over to Paul for the adaptations query.
Just on the general nature of adaptations, depending what the adaptation is, can depend on the amount of time that it takes. If we are looking for shower adaptation, again, they are administered through the area manager's team, and that can take time depending on the actual OT signing off the design. For more complex cases, they come through to our central team, and we're working through those at the minute. And again, depending on the amount of time and the to and fro and going back from the occupational therapist team and my team in designing them can take time. We do acknowledge that there has been a delay and that there's been a number of issues that happened recently that have been outside of our control, but we are working through those at the minute, and we're trying to expedite the time and reduce the amount of time to speed up adaptations to make sure that they get completed.
Thanks, Terry. Councillor Enright?
I'd just like to reiterate, first of all, what Councillor Andrews was saying. Because I've seen a number of quite tragic cases recently where disabled people in severe need, indeed one particular family who were deemed homeless, are unable to get housing in Downpatrick. And the idea about Verona having a budget to convert houses is a very sound idea. And I'd also say Verona probably need more of a budget to maintain and improve existing estates. So I know that we've been seeking with the Housing Executive and other agencies money to fence off Ballymoke Park and protect the pensioners from the ongoing antisocial behaviour down there. And we know we've got the police on board, the fire brigade on board, councillors are supporting it. And Verona wants to do it, but there's a shortage of budget, and that could dramatically improve the quality of life of people, not just in Ballymote, but in the model farm as well. But coming back to the subject of the night, there are two issues I'd like to bring up with you with regard to housing. First of all, of course, in the Downpatrick area, we're currently looking at disposing of some property, which I think the intention will be at some stage to pass it out to other government agencies. I know that's been done already in URI, and that would bring forward possibilities of the housing executive being first in the queue for the particular sites we're talking about. So I'm sure that if you made inquiries to council management, they wouldn't be behind the too behind in actually talking to you about this, even though we haven't got to the end of the process here with regards to Downpatrick. My main point I'd like to make is just to reinforce once again what Terry is saying. I'm at the other end of the council as far as it's possible to be away from Terry's area and still be in the same council. And it's the lack of will to latch on to PPS 21 and the exemption CTY 5, which allows you to build in small rural areas, small housing developments. The last four or five occasions you've been here, I've got upset about Ballyhorn. Now, since we last met, Ballyhorn has been on and it's been off and it's been on and it's been off and it's now on again. And this is a saga that's been going on for the last 20 or 30 years, and I hope to God now we've got the planning permission in and that we've now settled on the actual site that the local residents want. With regard to Strangford, we've got a much worse problem. So I used to say that Strangford's getting to be like Ross Trevor. It's actually far worse than Ross Trevor now. It's impossible for a local person to find housing in that particular area. I have brought local landowners along to the housing executive volunteering to give their land up for a social housing project. Even one particular landowner who actually was rezoned in the development plan before last, right in the centre of the village. Now, it's a particular extreme in Strangford, but that would apply to all the small villages in our area. And I know certainly two-bedroom houses in Collock for older people and in our glass would be at a premium. And I would just emphasise what Terry was saying again. An awful lot of young families wouldn't dream of putting their name down on the housing executive list in my area because they know they haven't a hope. And what's happening is you've got a migration up to Carriduff, which is putting pressure on that area. And then you're having to bring forward plans for two or three new schools. And the whole development of that particular area, people who are living in Carriduff simply because it's within shouting distance of being able to come home here to Macau. So I think we need you to engage with PPS 21 CTY on a much more radical way in and around, certainly my area, and I'm certain and Terry's area wouldn't be amiss as well. And it's something that's common right across the council. But if you look, we have a very big proportion of our population living in rural areas, and that's not going to change. And a very big proportion of our population living in rural areas outside of small towns and villages, and that's not going to change. And I know in our workshops on the development plan, we've talked about not just CTY5. We've also talked about the Clacken exemption, which is something else that could be done in the smaller hamlets. And we haven't had any of those in this council area. I know we've given PPS 21 a rattle on one occasion, but we still need to do more. Thank you.
Okay, Cadogan, and just touching on your first couple of points, and then I'll pass on to Alva about the housing issues. That disabled family, if you want to even get in touch with me and discuss that, yes, be more than happy, because if we have a disabled family unable to get housing, there are routes we can go in, complex needs and stuff. Isn't straightforward either, but I'll take a look at that for you. In relation to Ballymote, we do actually have the money to do that work. So the temporary fencing is up. What we're actually working our way through now is the approvals required to allow the Department of Infrastructure to agree for us to close off those permanently. So it's not a funding issue. We're actually just working through approvals and permissions at this stage. So I'm hoping that we'll see that through quite soon. So I will pass on to Alba for the housing.
Could open in relation to the asset disposal, again following the symposium, we have now set up a data sharing agreement with the council where they basically share, you know, their asset information with us, we share ours with them. And we've also been meeting the staff in that area to look at sites that they're, you know, presenting to the council as proposals, so that we have early sight of them and we can see if they match up to areas where we have unmet need. And we certainly see that as a, you know, a good outcome of some of the relationships that have been set up through the community plan, and we'd be keen to see that extended through, you know, the community planning board partnership, so that maybe the trust and other big landowners engage in that area, and that will certainly help us, you know, discharge our duties and address those needs. With regard to the rural issues, you'll be glad to know that the plan application has gone in for Ballyhornan and it's currently been registered by the planners, so there'll be ongoing obviously consultation following that and as it moves through the approval processes. With regard to Strathbridge, so this has been ongoing for a number of years. We have the site identification complete. It identifies a number of sites, and we've been unable to get an association to date to take those sites forward. We are going back to, you know, to nominate a further association, but we would be really keen on seeing a mixed tenure proposal emerge for Strathbridge for exactly the reasons that you've set out. But, you know, it is, we are reliant on housing associations delivering this, you know, because we aren't in the position where we're actually building. But we appreciate your frustrations about it, and we'll continue to try and move it forward. Just in relation to the disabled homes, in all of the new builds going forward and in a number of the schemes that are already on site, we've applied a 10% generic wheelchair requirement, so that we're building up, you know, more of a stock through new build of properties that are suitable for those people with mobility requirements, and that will continue in the programme.
Thank you. Councillor Craig.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. And thank you, Paul, and your colleagues for the presentation tonight. And if you could just also, Paul, maybe pass on our thanks to, as Terry has already said, to local housing manager Brian McGorian. Brona has been exceptionally helpful in all our dealings with her, so just pass that on, please. I do welcome your report tonight. And particularly interested in improvement to existing building stock. I see that your new building stock, obviously you're building low carbon homes which require a very low energy requirement. But suppose I'm thinking particularly in terms of older stock, which is maybe 30 years, 40 years, 50 years old. And I do welcome, you know, quick hits like double glazing and roof space insulation to improve the thermal value of the houses, but nevertheless there are you know, older properties that have walls that probably maybe haven't even a cavity wall to insulate, and the heat loss through the floor, etc. So it's more particularly a concern with regard to fuel poverty. When does it come a stage where you decide that properties are just getting too difficult to heat? You've done all the quick hits that you can do, and you decide that no, that they're, you know, they are too expensive to heat, and therefore you'll decide to build new property. So I'm just wondering how far you can actually go with older building stock.
Good point on that one, Councillor. We're actually in the process of creating an energy strategy for our stock. We have about 15,000 what we would call non-trad stock that are either solid wall or no cavity construction, or would have been constructed from industrial system builds. We've done some work very recently on a number of schemes where we've piloted EWI, and what we're doing is looking at how that could be applied to the stock. Obviously, the organisation does have a funding shortage of about £1 billion on its asset investment programme over the next 10 years, so we are looking at all options that are available to us. So, worst case scenario in the fact that we would look at the investment required within the property, and the return on that investment over its life cycle would determine its asset performance. If it is considerably poor, we would be looking at a potential redevelopment option, but we haven't come across many of those just yet. But depending on how we move forward and the position of funding for the housing executive portfolio, that may increase in the future, but we don't know at this stage.
EWI, Paul.
External wall insulation.
All right, okay. Thank you. Councillor Walker.
Thank you very much, Chair. And Thank you very much for your presentation, and I would also concur with previous speakers in relation to the local staff. They're second to none, very, very helpful. Just one point I'll make. Any time you do phone them, they are very, very helpful. And Gareth Morgan has been seconded to Newton Ard, so I hope we get him back, because he's an excellent member of staff. So he is, and he knows what he's doing on the ground. So hopefully we get him back, and he's not staying in Ards and North Down. Well, that's good. That's good. Picking up on a couple of points that have already been raised, the point system, I definitely think it is wrong in relation to it. Particularly, there's people playing the system here when it comes to health issues and when it comes to sectarianism. They're saying they're discriminated against, or they've been told to get out of their properties and that there, and they can play the system so they can. I have seen it in and around my own electoral area, where people will go and they'll get medical certificates and different things, and they're getting extra points. And I see them out doing a day's work, so they're doing that. Nothing wrong with them. And that's not fair on genuine people. So it's not. The other one is, in working with housing associations, there is housing stress right across this district. Are you working very, very closely with housing associations? I know there's a number of housing associations that are right across our council area. For example, there's two sites in Killaloe that has been passed for housing development. The developer just doesn't have the money in that, and he would be willing to sell on to a housing association. Now, you know, there is a housing need in the Killaloe area for housing. Hopefully, you do work closely with them in that, in relation to sourcing. We have had a couple of successes in Killaloe where there was a developer built houses, 16 of them, very good properties. A housing association bought them off the shelf. That, you know, freed up a lot of other houses, because housing, if your own properties then, people were moving into them because they needed bigger properties. And also think that when housing associations, and you should be maybe asking this, are building new bills, we need a lot of 3-4 bedroom new bills. The worst thing the housing executive ever done was when they done renovations years ago. I know my own property in Killaloe, and the ones in the estate I lived in, were 3 bedrooms. Yes, one of them might have been a wee box bedroom, but what they did with the majority of them was they took away that box bedroom, made it into a toilet. Then the bedroom that was downstairs, they made that there, for example, into a kitchen. So it would give you a 2-bedroom property instead of a 3. Now there's a shortage of 3-bed properties. So there is, because of that, I think there's a lot of 3-bed properties need to be built. And yourselves should be working with housing associations to try and deliver that there. Also, external maintenance schemes. I have a concern in Killaloe at the minute. There's an external maintenance scheme going on. 90% of the town will be getting it. But there's one area in the centre of the town, which is Brayside Gardens, for example. The outside of them houses haven't been painted for 10, 12 years. And I have raised it with the local office there over the last week. And people are starting to complain now to myself as a local councillor that, oh, look, they're getting lovely new windows in, they're getting new doors on, they're getting the fronts of their houses painted. We're not getting nothing now. Granted, about 8-10 years ago, there was a scheme to replace the windows there in Brayside Gardens, which that's all done. But what I'm asking for is, when the painters and decorators are in Killaloe doing your properties, why not do, there's 40 houses down in there, why not do them and you would have them all done? You would have the external painting done to them all. Now, some of them leaves a lot to be desired. And I do know that people should be responsible for keeping the fronts of the old place maybe clean and tidy at times and that there. But I think that when you're going in, especially for painting, You should be doing the whole town. So you should not doing 90%, 95% and leaving the other bit out. And finally, this is the problem I'm getting more and more, and I spoke to Michael Taylor about it, and he has been very helpful. But unfortunately, the law is the law, and it has to be adhered to. Young people going out and doing a few hours' work. Now, I've had three in the last month come into our office in Ballinahinch in relation to it. Taking up a bit of employment to try and make something of their lives. 16 hours, 15 hours. They're earning, one particular lady, young lady, is earning £125. Up until that, she was getting £75 unemployment. She was getting £60 rent paid. So she was, now because she's earning £125, she's to pay her full rent. Now, I know it's not your fault because the criteria has been laid out there, but I think you should be speaking to the department and social services or social security agency in relation to that, because that young girl and the other couple that has been in are saying, I'm just going to leave that wee part-time job that I have because I'm going to get £75 plus £60 rent. I'm better off. I'm earning £125 and I'm having to pay £60 out of it. Now, I think that's all wrong. That's not encouraging young people to go out and try and get a job. So I think you should be speaking to the Social Security Agency in relation to that there.
Okay, Billy. Right, so I'll pick up on that last point first. Just, do you know, have they actually been claiming universal credit? Or are they still in the old system?
They're still in the old system,
right, yeah. Because that was the traditional story where people felt it wasn't worth their while working, that they felt penalised. We have seen a number of scenarios. We're not long enough into universal credit to see, but there don't seem to be cases coming through to us where people are saying they're better off in universal credit if they're working the small number of hours. So it might be a situation where that does turn out to be one of the advantages of universal credit. As I say, it's early days. We can feed that up through the system, but as you say, these things, these policies are made high up in government and it's outside of our control. Just going back then on the point system as well, you said about people playing the health card and discrimination and stuff. What we would ask of all our staff is whenever they're doing their investigations into anything that anybody informs them, that they investigate it properly. You try to take in face value, but you must carry out a robust investigation. So if you're awarding points, you have the evidence there. If medical professionals are providing evidence to us, we can challenge that if we have a case to challenge it. Quite often it would be hard to go against what maybe a consultant or a doctor is saying. But we are starting more and more, Billy, to try, if we have local knowledge or we have any concerns, to use our fraud investigators. We do have a fraud team, and it is obviously illegal to provide false information on a housing application, and it will make somebody ineligible for housing. But again, our hands are quite tied in that. I know what you say, whenever there's any system, people will know how to work the system, and that's what we face. But all we can ask our staff to do is to investigate to the best of their ability. I'm going to move on then. Before I move on to housing, I'll just touch on the ECM. Totally logical to say that if you're going to do a town, you do 100% of the town. There must be a reason why Braeside was taken out at some stage and has gone on to a different cycle of ECMs to the rest of those properties. You didn't get a response back saying when they would be painted when you raised the query, no?
No, we just said you were going to take it back to me.
Right, okay.
Just informed me, I asked the question, was it being included and she come back, turned around and said that it wasn't being included.
Right, okay. Well, if you're saying that it's 10 to 12 years since the last one was done, it should be coming up very soon. So we'll get that information for you. Moving forward, it would be great if we could get them all onto the same schedule, but there will be reasons in the past why different estates have gone on to different cycles. You know, it'll be something going back. But we'll check it out for you and come back to you on that, okay?
In relation to our engagement with housing associations, we would work quite closely with them. We would share annually what the unmet need is, and we meet with them quite regularly to highlight the areas where we need new build solutions to meet that need. With regards to the sites in Killinlay, you know, the vendor, if you encourage them to engage with associations and they can follow that up with ourselves. In relation to the need for 3 and 4 bedrooms, any sites that do come in from associations, we would work quite closely with the local office to make sure whatever that we commit support to matches, you know, what the waiting list dictates. So we would be looking for accommodation for small families, for singles, for, you know, for larger families, for older persons, as the waiting list dictates.
Thank you. Councillor Quinn.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I too would like to thank you for the report. A lot of very informative stuff was in it. I have a couple of questions. One with regard to the bill. Housing associations and that seem to have a problem with finding sites to build on. But the private developers seem to have no problem. Now, I can think of villages that have doubled in size, some even trebled in size, with the housing associations not building one house towards that. Therefore, private landlords are going in, snapping up these houses, and a lot of families are being caught in a poverty trap when they have to meet these higher rents. My own village, Ballymartin, for one, has over more than trebled in size since the last housing area of houses were built. The housing associations are doing nothing to meet the demand. Yet every one of those houses is filled. There's even wait lists in that area as well. Also, with regard to the adaptations of houses, I have a wee problem with that adaptations. There's a lot of elderly people with mobility issues and that who need bathroom conversions. And they are very house proud, and a lot of them, when their houses were being done in that, coloured bathroom suites were sort of the style. Now they've been told, well, you can put in a shower, you'll have to move the wash-hand basin, put white ones in there, and the rest of the bathroom furnishings are avocado or some odd colour. So these people are refusing the grants to do the adaptations, putting themselves at risk because they're working on slippery surfaces and all the rest, and having to get in and out of baths. There's very little more money to put in a complete bathroom suite than put in half a bathroom suite. And there's so many of these people turning it down for that reason. Is there nothing to be done to help these people out with this problem? Thank you.
Just in relation to the new build, housing associations have, particularly in, you know, across Nurrymore and Down, found it difficult to buy sites. They're obviously grant funded to deliver social units, so they've encountered areas where it's been difficult for them to find sites within the allowance they're given. And just taking your point about villages that have seen huge increases and not corresponding increases in social housing, we're working with the local development plan team here in the council to make a provision for, you know, a development management tool that allows delivery of social housing within larger residential schemes, so that there's that more sort of continuous supply or pipeline built up where there is general needs housing being included in areas, and that's been picked up through the new local development plan. I suppose for the purposes of the development plan, we would consider it to be social housing plus intermediate housing, which is like a co-ownership product. So it's between the social and the owner-occupied tenure.
Councillor Quinn, just in respect to the adaptations, is that private or housing executive? Is that happening too? Right. I can come back to you directly with that. I'll have to have a conversation with the Director of Regional Services and find out what the protocol is on the private sector grant side, if you're happy for me to do that.
Yeah. Okay. Councillor Clark.
All right, thanks, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. Again, on behalf of our party, I'd like to thank the local managers and that for their assistance in my own areas, Brona McGowan and Mabel Gilmore, the patch manager. So pass on our thanks. In regards to the Newcastle area, obviously there's a chronic demand for housing, and I welcome the rebuilding of the flats and that were damaged by arson in Bracken Avenue in the Burndale. As you're aware, Loma, the contractors were threatened at Bracken Avenue this past number of days, and this is obviously delaying the completion of the works in that area, and it's very concerning to the CFD, but it's very concerning that people have been delayed the opportunity of a home because of mindless idiots. We have a meeting scheduled for tomorrow. How speedily do you think we can get them back on the site? It's the first question. They all seem to be about the Burndale. There's an issue in around the other flats in regards to appears. We're talking about external cycle maintenance. The fencing and the wooden exterior in around the flats is very poor. Again, a lot of graffiti, a lot of burning of bins against them has damaged the appearance of the area. So I would like the housing executive to look at that in particular, to lift the appearance and to lift the appearance of the whole estate in the sense of community. The community has even said that the paint is provided, that the community will get involved in painting the fences and that, and they'll do that as a part of an initiative for the community, you know. So if that was possible to be looked at, this has come out of an interagency, a lot of these issues. The cleansing and maintenance of the alleyways in the Burndale Estate and Bracken Avenue is always a contentious issue. Some of them are road service, DFA, and other alleyways are then the housing executive's responsibility. And then issues arise then over who has the responsibility of cleansing and cutting the hedges. It's just a very bad situation, with alleyways always find themselves in a bad condition. And now, that's not the statute body's fault in totality. Obviously, people are dumping stuff in the alleyways as well. But I think it'd be very useful if we get both maps of ownership, yourself and maybe Hugh Morgan meet, and we could just finally finalise who is the responsibility, and then, because I'm continually fighting with council office, you know, to tell them to go out and cleanse them, and they're saying they're not ours, you know. So I think it's important to get that sorted as quickly as possible. The other issues in regards to the Phoenix Gas rollout that's coming into Newcastle, so the network over the next couple of years, so will there be assistance provided for tenants to avail of gas, natural gas, as a cheaper option of heating their homes, reducing fuel poverty? And also, will you be building this into future plans going forward, housing plans in regards to heating provision? All right, thank you.
Okay, Willie, thank you. Yes, so we have some meeting tomorrow in relation to Bracken Avenue. What we're hoping to do is the PS and I will be attending that meeting and updating us on this live threat. The contractor, fortunately, has sent us that they feel that they could get their workers back on site if there's some level of reassurance and some visibility. So we will be asking the PSNI to make themselves visible in the locality to investigate this threat as quick as they can. I know they do have some CCTV that they have, which they need to look at. So really, Willie, we're going to push them, because we are so close to getting some of these flats back. There's only a matter of days of work required on some of these. And at the other end of that, we have homeless people waiting to go into these. So we, you know, it's in our interest to get this moving along as well. We will look at the ECM and the fencing for you. I think it's a great idea if the community can get involved, because that will help bring the community spirit that has been broken, I suppose, by a lot of these arson attacks, involved in helping out there. But again, obviously the responsibility falls with us to improve the overall appearance of the estate, and that's something that we definitely will look at as a whole. The cleansing and the maintenance of the alleyways, yes. We started looking at these maps. So we have council maps, we have housing executive maps, we have adoption maps. So we are going to pull the whole lot together and be clear on who owns what, and then we need to get into a cycle of cleaning that everybody knows. That's housing executive responsibility, that's roads responsibility, and then we'll all know going forward. So that has already started, because I know we were looking at maps a couple of weeks ago in relation to Newcastle and looking at that for you. Phoenix Gas, yes, it'll be great whenever we get gas into Newcastle. It is our preferred option, as the housing executive's preferred option of heat. And what we will do, if anybody is due to get a heating replacement or their boilers are 15 years or older, that we would be asking tenants to accept the gas. That would be a preference for us over oil or anything like that. So we'll be welcoming it whenever it comes. We will liaise with tenants and let them know who's on the programme to get that heating in. Okay.
Mr. Carr.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks for the report. I was looking at the Housing Executive Stock report and the tables produced there, and on the final lines it talks about sold stock in Newry, Mourne and Down at over 12,000. I suppose the first question was, is over what period of time is that 12,000 been sold? Has that been sold this past year, or since we started selling houses back in Maggie's time?
From the start.
From the very beginning.
From the very beginning, yeah.
And then in the Newry, Mourne and Down area, we have 5,304 left with 36,000 people looking for them. You know, really, if every one of them was empty tomorrow, you'd only put a dent and what the requirement is. And I suppose really the question is, you know, have the homeless people any chance at the moment? I didn't realise that, I suppose, maybe that the stock was that low. And I suppose another question is, are we still selling them? Are we still selling off houses? And what is the criteria? Is it number of years in the 5 years? So every 5 years, you know, if you get into a house for 5 years, you have a chance of buying it and moving on. And it seems an enormous problem that with 5,000 of a stock and you have 36,000, in fact, you have 24,000 in housing stress. There's people screaming for a house, 24,000 of them out there. We don't have any, obviously, but even if all our houses were empty, there'd be 5,000 available. I don't know. Seems unconscionable. But the only other thing I was thinking about was the adaptations, and I spoke to Loma before the thing about the quality of some of the workmanship that goes into these, and I know it's not the housing executive staff that would do it would be outside contractors, but there are quite a few issues there, and can end up causing more stress and more anxiety and bigger problems for people that are already critically ill. But I'll leave that and talk to Loma about that tomorrow. But really, sort of, when you look at what stock you have and the number of people looking for them, can we really say that we're providing a service of housing people in need? Is there not some big, great big plan that we haven't seen yet that's going to have to come in to deal with it?
Just as in relation to the stock rate, there's approximately 5,000, so we have 5,000 units left across the district. In terms of the total number of applicants that we have for across Newry Mourne, on page 53 we have the breakdown, and you can see how that relates to the stock level of housing executive stock currently in the district. In terms of the first appendix, appendix 2, we have set out what the social housing need requirement is across each of the settlements, and that sort of identifies what we're asking associations to find, you know, the additional units that are needed to address that need, and that's what we're sort of just asking them. We need to find sites in those areas that can help address that. In relation to the point about selling off stock, we are still operating the house sales scheme, and like Luna said, it's once you 5 years, it entitles you to put in an application to purchase, subject to meeting all the different criteria. But I think it's currently out to consultation at the minute with a view to ending that. I think the Department for Communities have an open consultation for for people to feed back into that.
Pastor Byrne.
Thanks, Jeff. Yeah, and just on Councillor Carr's point, I suppose you're between a rock and a hard place, and what Councillor Hardy raised at the start was, you know, the housing need in Crossmaglen, which is the town I live in, and I suppose he's right, it is 20 years since Rockheaton was built, and then there was another private development built that was taken over by the council in Ferry Glen. But I suppose when people are given the opportunity to buy the house, you're selling off the stock, which I'm not complaining about, because when people then get a roof over their head, they should be given the opportunity to buy the house. So you're between a rock and a hard place. I wanted to make just a general comment because it frustrates me, it actually angers me when we start talking about, I suppose, Roma, you touched on fraud and looking into people's, you know, health conditions and challenging at times with the challenged GPs and consultants. And that does anger me because we get into the area where we're talking about, you know, well, this person's stealing your house or that person's stealing what you should be getting. And at the bottom line is, we've had a housing symposium. It outlines clearly the housing need, and those houses need to be built. So this blame game of passing around and saying that such and such is getting the house when they should be getting it, and they know the system. I mean, any councillor, you know, Councillor Walker was talking about it there. I think, first of all, it bothers him being ignorant at times. I had one case, not to go into any names in particular, but one case where one person in my area, young lady, actually had to jump through hoops in order to prove A, that her two kids had a serious health condition. She was jumping on taxis and buses to try and get to hospital 3 times a week. On the top of it, she was diagnosed with cancer. And I mean, I couldn't believe what she had to come up with to justify that the damp in our house was affecting their condition of cystic fibrosis. And I think at times it needs relaxed. And this is where we start going around, you know, blaming people and saying, justify your need, actually scares people off putting their names forward to go on the housing list. Because people saying, listen, people are going to question. You know, and I suppose it came up, the reason why it came up when Councillor Walker was talking is, I had the same, I had comments made to me about certain people around my area, well, such and such is out working. Well, they were wrong. The person was volunteering to get out of the house and to sustain some level of mental health, but then they're being challenged as they're being scrounging and to get what they shouldn't be, you know, given, go out and work like everybody else. And I think that's really ignorant and disingenuous. We held a housing symposium to identify the need. We know the need. Stop blaming everybody else and start building the houses to meet that need. And we need to get away from this, you know, advanced checks and trying to put people through hell in order to justify how sick they really are. So it sort of angers me, and it's just a general point in that.
Sure, I think you need to come in there. If Councillor Byrne, I could take Councillor Byrne to my area. There's people using houses for gyro drops and that there as well. And I have been successful in the past through Verona. So I have. And getting houses repossessed because of it. And there's people. And, you know, I am telling you as it is. I'm not being disingenuous. So I'm not. I know, and I'm telling you, that there is people swinging the lead to get properties. There's people supposed to be in properties, and they're not even living in it. They're living with a girlfriend a mile up the road. So they are. So I'm telling the truth. I'm not being disingenuous.
What I'm saying, just from that, I'm not challenging what you've said is correct, and that's property value. What I am challenging is, I'm not talking personally, you know, certain aspects. I'm not talking personally, you know, certain aspects.
Well, I suppose, Peter, I would agree with you that nobody should be put through hoops to try and prove. What we are running is the common selection scheme is a scheme that's obviously built in legislation, and we're trying to run a balanced and equitable scheme. So all we ask our staff to do is fair investigations, to be robust and be fair, because at the end of the day they have to defend any decisions they make. So if you're giving somebody points that entitles them to housing, you're giving somebody access to an asset which obviously people need. And in any system, there's a very, very small minority where someone's going to play the system and there's going to be fraud. But as a public body, we have to make sure that we cover that, that there's good governance and there is good control. Now, if it goes too much the other way, I don't want my staff doing that either. But I will defend staff making robust decisions, and we have to, because this, as I say, it's a scheme based in law. You know, so we wouldn't be encouraging staff to challenge GP or doctor reports ad hoc. It's only if there is a concern or something else has been brought to our attention. And things are brought to our attention where there might be a suspicion, we might have to investigate something further. But that's definitely not a culture that we set down, that we would want people to be putting people through hoops and stuff that they shouldn't be. What we want is to be fair and equitable to everybody, because there's limited resources, and with limited resources in housing, we want it to be the fairest system that we can manage.
Councillor Harvey.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you all for coming this evening. I appreciate it. Just a wee question on Cross Scars need. See, there's 50 houses needed there. Maybe you could give us a wee update on how progress is going addressing this need. Okay, thank you.
In terms of the projection for Cross Scar for the next 5 years is for 50 units. And Clonmel, as you know, we're on site there at the moment with 20 units, and we're still encouraging associations to identify additional sites to address the shortfall of the 30 units. So.
Councillor McAteer.
Okay. Yeah, thank you again for your report. Apologies for not being here when you were presenting it. Could I just ask this on page 20, where you talk about the site identification studies, because the one in our area, I noticed it was the Warren Point, our BEA. How do you carry that out? Do you look at land that's currently in whose ownership, or what way you do that, and when will you be carrying that out in the Codleave area?
Okay, the site identification studies are carried out. We look at basically everything that's within the settlement, and we essentially do like a land use survey, and we see with the public sector, private sector, land in our own ownership. We sort of classify it based on what our planners consider its development potential to be. Those sites that we feel have development potential, we then contact the landowners to see if they would be interested in putting the site forward for social housing. And where we get agreement from them, we nominate a housing association to progress, you know, engagement, start engagement with the landowner with a view to you know, developing a social scheme on that site. Following the symposium in January, we decided to look at Newry-Mourne Down, by each of the 7 districts of extra areas, and we have sort of subdivided the site identification studies in every area where we have a need and we don't have any prospect of addressing that need. So essentially our planners are going out and they're looking at everything that's available, you know, in those areas, identifying sites, identifying the landowner, you know, going through that process. And then we are meeting with each of the DEA forums to show, I suppose, what we've done to date, sort of the feedback we're getting, I suppose, sense check some of the, you know, the things that are coming up. Can they give us feedback maybe on things that we haven't really picked up for some local knowledge. But again, we can pass that on to the association.
When will we expect to see you in the Codleave VA?
I met Codleave. I have a list of new things, and I can send that to you. But I mean, if we've missed you, or you know, you want further feedback on it, I can certainly.
Yeah, I was just interested in the whole how it was just carried out, but you know, yeah. Because there's not much sort of land left in terms of that was drawn up the original area plan. You know, I'm just wondering how you identify that, or were you also identifying, you know, vacant properties with potential to make approaches to people to buy that? Or that's the sort of thing, wasn't it? It's just how it was carried out.
I suppose where the vacant properties are sort of sites, or potentially could be sites they would be in it. This is different. DEAs have brought forward the idea of sort of looking at living over the shops again, particularly in some of the, you know, the more rural towns and villages, and we certainly wouldn't be against considering any of those for social housing, you know, if they were suitable.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. You could pass that on to me, if you, whatever you have. Yeah, thank you.
Councillor Enright, is there something new?
Yes, Chairperson. Thanks for letting me back in. I just wanted to pick up on what Billy was saying. A couple of years ago, I was complaining about the fact that the Housing Executive wasn't actually dealing with complaints about gyro drops and houses being used under false pretences. I know that in the last year or two, it has improved. I mean, in two occasions this year where houses that were obviously being used or abused and keeping people who were actually homeless out. That being said, though, there doesn't seem to be a formal procedure. So when you go in to highlight one of these into your offices, you can actually shock the staff out of their socks because they're just not used to dealing with this sort of complaint. It would be useful if there was a particular person or a particular email address or somewhere where you could go that wasn't the normal staff. And that would equally apply to situations where you've got extreme misbehavior in housing association property. It's very straightforward when you're dealing with that sort of behavior in housing executive property, but when you come across a situation, which I have in recent times in housing association property, where extreme behavior is abusing all the other tenants on the site, housing associations don't seem to be equipped in the same way that the housing executive is equipped to deal with this sort of situation. So there needs to be some agreement that you make with the housing association as to how these sorts of issues could be developed, and maybe publish it as a procedure or a policy that would make it easier for people like me when we come to deal with you on these issues collectively. Would that finish by saying, well, I agree with Pete that it's disappearingly rare that these sort of situations going on, and what we actually need are more houses for more people, you know.
Okay, Cadogan. Yes, the gyro drops, what I would suggest, the first point of contact is always the patch manager. So we now have patch managers in place for every estate. So if somebody isn't living or perceived not to be living in their property, the first point of contact for the investigation is the patch manager. The patch manager does have a procedure that they follow. They have a checklist that they have to complete just to make sure that it's robust, because sometimes you will get complaints, somebody's being malicious and there's no truth to it. Then, once they go through that, we now have a fraud investigation team. So it's a local internal team, and that's probably why you're seeing a difference as well. Previously, in the past, we would have taken it to a certain stage and got very frustrated that we couldn't take it any further. Our fraud officers have powers that the staff in the local office don't, and they can, you know, they can get more success with these genuine cases. So I would definitely encourage anybody that you find out who your patch manager is for your locality and make them your point of contact. Housing associations and antisocial behaviour, it's an old chestnut. Some of the housing associations are better at it than others. Some of the larger housing associations have actually gone and taken some of the housing executive's policies and procedures and implemented something similar in their own organisations. But not all of them have done that. Now, we have no remit over them. They don't have to do anything that we tell them to do. They're an organisation that operates their own policies. But what we can do, if you have a particularly difficult case, we meet regularly with the police and the council on the ASB forums. And I know on some occasions, if there's housing association estates, we've got those included in, and we've invited the housing officers from the housing association to attend as well. So to put a bit of responsibility onto them to do something with it, and that has worked quite successfully. So if you have specific examples, that's probably the best way that that's dealt with. So again, if you let the patch manager know, we could make the contact with the housing association and add them into the forum for you.
Okay, councillors, is that everyone? Thank you very much. Thank you, Paul, Loma and Alva, for taking the time to come to see us tonight. It's very informative. So we've only one more item left on the agenda, and that's for Noton. It's the Special Housing Needs Symposium Progress Update.
So if you're all content with that, we can just note it. Okay, folks, thank you very much.
Right, thank you.